Tov, I would really not going to introduce Rabbi Gold as much as tell you a Musar message that I got from listening to one of Rabbi Gold's over 800 shiurim on his website. I downloaded a couple of the Teshuvah shiurim, and I turn one of them on, and it's not Rabbi Gold speaking. And I pay attention, and the voice is familiar, and then I recognize it. It was me introducing Rabbi Gold last year. So I listened to what I said, and then I started to shake. Because what it says in Pirkei Avot, ponder three things, and you will stay out of the clutches of sin. One of them is ozen shama'at, an ear that listens, an MP3 recorder that records what you say, a website technician who puts it up, and it's there for anyone to listen. Baruch Hashem, it wasn't so bad. I was a little flippant. If you remember, it was about Rabbi Gold's email address, goldofjerusalem@gmail.com. But I realized that whatever you say, you got to watch what you say because it's going to end up on Rabbi Gold's website. With that introduction, I would like to recommend, if you have not yet visited the website, it's, you come to hear Rabbi Gold on a Tuesday morning, and once in a while, like tonight, on an evening. But on the website, you can hear him anytime you want. What's now called 24-6, which is a play on 24-7, but can't listen to his material on Shabbat yet. Who knows if in the future there'll be a Shabbos MP3 player. And until that happens, any time of day or night, any day of the week. And I will admit something. I have a lot of other things on my MP3 player, like old radio shows. I can't listen to them now, because if I have a shear of Rabbi Gold there, how can I choose Fibber McGee and Molly? Or The Whistler, or The Shadow? So that's how you have spoiled my listening habits, and I present the evening version of Rabbi Shalom Gold.
Phil, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure being introduced by you. Next year, Nachamol, and for all of us, for many, many healthy years, we should get together again and continue to study Torah. All right. The shiur is about tshuva and Jewish history. It may take about two-thirds of the shiur or more until you're finally going to get the connection between tshuva and Jewish history. So all that I have to say is savanut, be patient. And if you'll be patient and you will see how everything comes together, I think that you will feel that the evening was worthwhile. We begin with the first Rashi in Chumash. There it is, number one, the first Rashi in Chumash. Usually when I go to the first Rashi in Chumash, audience begins to think, okay, here he goes, he's going to talk about politics, and he's going to talk about the Palestinians, and he's going to talk about Yehuda v'Shomron. No. Hang it. The great first Rashi. The great first Rashi, Rabbi Yitzhak said, Torah should not have begun with the story of creation. Torah should have begun in Parshat Bo, in Sefer Shemot, with the words, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, this month shall be unto you the first of months, because that's the first mitzvah that God communicates to the Jewish people. By Yedaber Hashem El Moshe Vel Aaron, God spoke to Moshe and Aaron, and he told them, this month shall be unto you the first of months. Now, Torah is a book of law. If it's a book of law, it should start with the first mitzvah. Umatam patar de bereshit. What is the reason that it began with the book of Genesis, the story of creation? Mishum famous Rashi, mishum toach masov higid liamov. God told the strength of his deeds to his people, latet lehem nachalat goyim, in order to give them the inheritance of the nations. Shem yomru umos ha'olam, if the nations of the world will ever say, listim atem, that you are thieves, you stole Eretz Yisrael, shekavashtem, you conquered Arzol Shiva Goyim, the lands of the seven nations, Haim Omrim Lahem, Israel's response to them will be, God created the world. Kol Ha'aretz Shalakodesh Baruch Hu, the whole earth belongs to the Holy One, blessed be He, who bera'a, He created the world, and He gave it, Lasher Yashar B'Einot, He gave it to the one who found favor in His eyes. And therefore, B'Ritzono, it was His will, Netana Lahem, He gave it to them, and then it was His will that He took it from them and gave it to us. First, Rashi, great Rashi. I can't help it, but I'm overcome with an insight that I once gave into this in this Rashi, which I now begin to think may even be related to our topic. This Rashi, you know, I'll tell you what about this Rashi. I'm going to tell you a hypothetical story. It may not even be hypothetical. This is an awesome Rashi. I think that people can read the Rashi 1,000 times and they don't get it. You're going to get it. You're going to walk out of here getting this Rashi. I imagine the following. It could have happened at any terrifying moment in Jewish history since Rashi wrote this 900 years ago. I'll take the last one. Imagine Auschwitz, children's barracks, children that may have a day, two, to live, maybe hours. A Rebbe makes his way into the Kinderlach in order to console them. They know what's happening. They know what's happening. And he says, Kinderlach, we still have time. Let's learn some Torah. Let's start with Bereshis. And he teaches them, Kinderlach, Bereshis bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Kinderlach, we're now going to learn the first Rashi. And the Rebbe learns the first Rashi with them. And a little Yingala raises his hand and he says, Rebbe, what's Rashi saying? The nations of the world are going to accuse us of having stolen Eretz Yisrael. We don't own the shirts on our backs. We don't know how many hours we have to live. What's Rashi talking about? And the Rebbe, with tears streaking down his cheeks, he says to them, Yingalach, if Rashi said that, then we have to believe that someday it's going to be true. There were many years that I used to get terribly upset when we would be condemned again by the United Nations that we stole Arab land. Until the Rashi came to me. Rashi was right! For 850 to 900 years, you had to take a leap of faith in order to understand the Rashi. Any Yingala for 850 years would have asked the same question, what's Rashi talking about? We need all of Sefer Bereshis in case someday they're going to accuse us of having Eretz Yisrael. Pipe dream! It'll never happen! But it did happen. And we're the beneficiaries. Every time they condemn us, you know what I say? Rashi was right. We were correct in having taken the leap of faith. what Jews needed for 850 years in order to understand that Rashi, for us, it's the reality. Rashi knew what he was talking about. The time came, and they're still doing it, and I enjoy every time they condemn us. Do you know what that means? The impact that history has had in our understanding of that Rashi. History has told us that we place our faith on a great man. Rashi knew what he was talking about. That's an awesome change in the whole way we look at that first Rashi. You know what it means? I think that Rashi, when he wrote it, certainly believed that it was going to be true one day. There was no question. There was no such question in his mind. But it's more than that. You know what the first Rashi is saying? Yingluch, you're beginning the study of Chumash. You have to take a great leap of faith. You can't learn Torah like a science or a history textbook. It's divine. And if it isn't true at one moment in history, you can bet on it that it's going to be true at some moment in history. Hod l'Hashem ki tov, we were zocha to see the greatness of this Rashi. History impacts on Rashi. History impacts on tshuva. What a profound impact history is going to have on tshuva. But that's not why I learned the Rashi. I have a completely different question. I'm not into politics at all. I want to ask the flip side of Rashi's question. All right. So Rashi says, Torah should have begun with the first mitzvah. And the first mitzvah is, this month shall be the first of months. What's that mitzvah? The mitzvah of Kiddush HaKodesh, the calendar. Rebbeinu Shalom, what's going on over here? Is this the most inspiring thing that God can say to the Jewish people in his first communication to them? Listen to me, you children of Israel who are still in Egypt. The lunar month has 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. You got it? What an inspiring message. I would have thought that the first mitzvah would be something like, Od Avinu Chai, Am Yisrael Chai, Anoch Yashem Elokecha, Shema Yisrael, V'ahavta Re'acha Kamocha. Something moving, passionate, strong, that resonates across the centuries. The first mitzvah is an astronomic calculation. And we're only talking about the simple thing. The rest of the calendar, to know how to put together a Jewish calendar, is not a simple story at all. There's a great deal to learn. This is the first mitzvah. So I'm asking the flip side of Rashi. Umatam Pasach, why did Torah begin its legislative part with HaChodesh HaZelochem? This is what they needed. That's what they were waiting for. The great, inspiring, moving, dramatic message in Mitzrayim. The rest of the shiur is going to be to say that HaChodesh HaZelochem was the most inspiring, the most dramatic, and the most important message that the Rebbeinu Shem could have given to Klal Yisrael at that first encounter. What's the significance of Rosh Chodesh? I always wondered, the Greeks, when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, they went ahead and they legislated against Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, and Milo. Chashmonayim. Chodesh, Shabbos, Milo. I can understand why they legislated against Mila, you know, that God is inscribed on our bodies. Ah, that's powerful. Shabbos. More than Jews kept the Shabbos, Shabbos kept the Jews. What did they want from Rosh Chodesh? What did they want from poor little Rosh Chodesh? You know how thrilled we are when we finish a Shmon Esrei and we remember to say Yalav Yavo. And in benching, if we remember Yalav Yavo in benching, boy, do we deserve credit for that. What do they want from Rosh Chodesh? What bothered them about Rosh Chodesh? So there are a number of points that I'm going to make with regard to this Rosh Chodesh. And after we've done that, we're going to move to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The first month is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. There's an amazing Rambam. Most probably one of the most amazing Rambams of all. And you'll see that this is not just another one of my great exaggerations, you know, like every Rashi is the greatest Rashi I ever learned, and every Pasuk is the greatest Pasuk. This is the greatest Rambam. The Rambam is number two. I'll tell you, before we look at the relevant sentence, the Rambam says the following. I want you to know something, that there's a great secret involved in the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctifying the new moon. And that secret is that it all depends on Eretz Yisrael. When throughout the world we have a calendar, we make the calculation of the calendar, its effect is, because this calculation was made in the year 400 in Eretz Yisrael by Gedolei Yisrael, who had the great smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the halacha of Kiddush HaChodesh is something that is inextricably intertwined with Eretz Yisrael. Ki mitzion teitze Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Can't do it. They could never announce or sanctify the new moon outside of Eretz Yisrael. I hear. Number two, ve'enonu osam hayon cheshbon. The only reason we make the calculation and we print our calendars is it tells us, our cheshbon is that which tells us what had been established by the Greek rabbis of Eretz Yisrael. Kimi shebeseder ze atzmo mechashvin bekorim hayom lo b'ne'iyo. We don't establish Rosh Chodesh as they did in days of yore by having witnesses who saw the new moon and they come to testify. We depend on what was established by the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael in the 4th century. Our calculation doesn't mean a thing. Our calculation is only to reveal to us what day was sanctified all the way back there in Eretz Yisrael by Gedolei Yisrael. The next piece is, there's one sentence here that is certainly one of the most amazing ever written by the Rambam. V'hinini mosif l'chabir, I'm going to add clarification. He's going to set up a theoretical situation. Ilu hinachnu l'mashal, if we would assume, for example, Shebnei Eretz Yisrael ye odru me Eretz Yisrael, that the sons of Eretz Yisrael will be missing from Eretz Yisrael. What he means to say, there are no Jews. There isn't a single solitary Jew in Eretz Yisrael. If that would happen, he's going to go on later to say the halacha that we're finished. We have no calendar. We have nothing. But before he can go on and say that, there's a parenthetic comment unlike any other in the Rambam. If we would assume, for example, that there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, listen to what he says. I can feel the pain. Cholilo lakel me'asod, so God forbid that he should do that. God forbid that he should ever permit that to happen. Because God has promised us, he's not going to erase nor remove the remnants of this people completely. What's he talking about? You know what he's saying? if there are 50 million Jews in the whole world, and there isn't a single solitary Jew in Eretz Yisrael, our cheshbon is nothing, our calendar is nothing. We don't have Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, we're finished. We can even have 50 million Jews, Shomrei, Torah, Umitzvos, outside of Eretz Yisrael. Nothing. But if in Eretz Yisrael there's one Jew, then our calendar works. The Jew can be Yossi Sarid or Shalamit Alonit. It doesn't make any difference. That's the halacha, that's what he says. And when he had to set up this hypothetical idea that if we would assume, for example, there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, Cholila Lokel Me'asodzo, God forbid, he promised not to destroy us. If there's a total absence of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, that's destruction. Chassam Sofer writes that when the Rambam came to set up this hypothetical situation, he trembled. His hand was shaking as he wrote these words. And he was compelled to write, Cholila Lokel Me'asodzot. And then he goes on to say, if there would be no bezin, then no bezin. This not, we have no calendar. That's the halacha. Okay. So that means, therefore, that Kiddush HaKodesh and Eretz Yisrael, one, again, they are inextricably intertwined. That's an important message. The Rebbeinu is sending a message to Klal Yisrael. The first mitzvah he gives them is he's telling them that you're going to end up with an Eretz Yisrael that's going to be your future. No more Eretz Mitzrayim. And you are going to be so rooted in that country, wherever you may be, throughout all of history. Your calendar, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, everything is going to be dependent on that bond with Eretz Yisrael. Number two, of course, is this is the time of year to learn Mishnayos Rosh Hashanah. So I went over Mishnayos Rosh Hashanah. So it is. There's the beautiful description. How at some point in time, when there was a large Jewish community out in the diaspora in Bavel, but the Sanhedrin was deciding in Yerushalayim when Rosh Chodesh is. How did you notify the rest of the Jewish world? Didn't have modern means of communication. So the Mishnah describes how they communicated. On the last day of the month, when they expect the month to change, last day of the month, there are people waiting on the top peaks from Eretz Yisrael across to Mesopotamia. People are waiting there with torches. The moment the word is given that the Sanhedrin has sanctified the new moon, they sent a signal to Harazesim. There was somebody waiting. The first torch was lit on Harazesim, and then one after another, Sartava, Beit Baltin, all of these mountains are listed all the way into Mesopotamia, all the way straight across the Middle East. And mountain after mountain, they've been waiting to get the message from Yerushalayim. Mishnah goes on to say, the last mountain, the fellow on the last mountain kept waving his torch back and forth, Ad sheho yaroeh kol hagolah lefonov, until he saw the entire exile before him like a flame of fire. You know what was going on in Bavel on the last day of the month? Jews were walking around going about their business, but wait a minute, they kept looking westward. Is there a message coming from Yerushalayim? I once explained this in a way that is so archaic, it makes me so ancient. just makes me like it. I'm not ancient. It must have been about 36 years ago. I was rabbi in West Hempstead. Well, that's a long time. Young Israel of West Hempstead. I came home from davening in the morning, and my wife is clearly excited, moved, emotional, and she says to me, "You know, we just had a call from Yerushalayim. A call from Yerushalayim? They're going to call back in about 10 minutes. 10 minutes later, the phone rings, and it's somebody calling me from Yerushalayim. Remember, you youngsters over here, there were no cell phones. These kids come here for a year. They walk around with their cell phones at any time of day or night. They call mama or papa, and half the time their parents won't say mom in the middle of a class. Mom, busy, I'm out with the girls in Center One. In those days, you didn't just, and it was not so long ago, 35 years ago, you didn't just pick up the phone and call Yerushalayim. I had learned here yet in the 50s, in order to make a phone call, you had to go to the post office and you had to make an appointment at what time, and you had to let them know. Don't ask, it was. And over here, I get the call. It was Rabbi Rose, Olav Hashalom, calling me from Yerushalayim. So we went through, you know, the usual nonsense, but I was visibly shaken. You sound like your next door. You sound like your next door. It's so clear. What a great connection. Nagusha. But, silly. But you know what happened? What I was experiencing was I was connected to Yerushalayim. Do you know what happened for hundreds of years in Bavel? On the last day of the month, millions of Jews walked the streets looking westward, waiting. And the moment they saw that torch, a burst of joy in Bavel, they had just received a phone call from Yerushalayim. The Greeks understood that if they truly want to rule the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have to cut the relationship between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. There was one other thing that was extremely significant to the Greeks about this Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh reminded the Jewish people month after month that there are real leaders. There's a Sanhedrin. There are Gedolei Yisrael, people who carry the Mesorah, the tradition of Moshe, Kibel, Torah, Sinai, who sorrowly Yeshua, generation after generation. Not everybody who wants to can go out and put up a shingle, Rabbi and Pastor Shailas. Torah isn't Hefter. Powerful leadership. A reminder of that every month. We're waiting for what the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim is going to say. What a powerful, powerful message that was, month by month. And if the Greeks wanted to truly rule over the Jewish people, they would have to sever the relationship between Gedolei Yisrael and the men in the street. Rosh Chodesh was very significant, extremely significant. It was a great message to the Jewish people. The connection to Eretz Yisrael, the bond with Yerushalayim in HaKodesh, loyalty to Gedolei Yisrael. And now I come to the last point of significance, and this is the one that I really want to deal with. The Mishnah says that Nisan, the month of Nisan, is Rosh Hashanah Limelachim, kings of Israel, we count their year from Nisan. Kings of the nations of the world, we count their year from Tishrei. Yeah, it's a pretty strange thing. There's no other people on the face of this earth that has, you know, the year changes on January 1st, and the first of months is July. You know, it's a pretty strange thing when you start to think about it. And say, we're going to Lashana Torah Tikasev, Tishrei, but wait a minute, the first month, HaKhodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that first month, that's this little stretch. Obviously, the difference between the two, why is it that Tishrei is Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Hashanah for the kings of the nations of the world, and Nisan is for the kings of Israel? The difference between the two is the beginning of the agricultural year is Tishrei. The year of nature is Tishrei. Nisan is the beginning of the miraculous year. The year of Nisim, beyond nature. Which is going to bring us to maybe our most important point that will begin to clarify things. Ask a simple question. Now think about it before you answer. Did Jews receive Torah at Sinai because they went out of Egypt? Or did they go out of Egypt in order to receive Torah at Sinai? I'm going to say it again. This is a real yeshivish hakira. Did we receive Torah at Sinai because we went out of Egypt? Or were we taken out of Egypt in order to receive Torah at Sinai? Obviously, we were taken out of Egypt in order to receive Torah at Sinai. God said that to Moshe at the burning bush, that when you will come out, Tavdun et Elokim, you will serve God on this mountain. Do you know the significance of that statement? Do you know what we've just now said? We just blew everybody's mind away. You know what's happened over here? What happened over here is that a present moment in history is dictated by a future event. What? We're gonna work on this. There is a significant, dramatic difference between the history of the nations of the world and the history of the Jewish people. The history of the nations of the world is chronological. A leads to B to C. Siba umesuvav. Cause and effect. One thing follows the other. I had a history teacher in the Sifta Torah Vadas. We had to know all of the causes of the French revolution. And you had to be able to say revolution the way he said it. Now, what were their causes for the French Revolution? And of course, wait till we came to the First World War. The causes of the... what brought on the arms race, like economic, social, military, all sorts of considerations caused the First World War and the Second. Of course, you may not know, this is parenthetic, according to the Hamas Charter, and this was repeated recently by one of the heads of the Palestinian Authority, it says in the Charter that every war in history, barring none, was started by the Jews. Go make peace with these guys. Go. I'm telling you, it says it there. Every war in history is our fault. Okay? So, the history of the nations of the world is a history of cause and effect. A leads to B. It's linear. It's chronological. 1, 2, 3, 4. Everything moves. Malchei Umot Olam, the kings of the nations of the world, they count their year from Tishrei, because Tishrei is the beginning of a natural year. Everything is natural. Jewish history is dramatically different. Jewish history is not cause and effect. It's not chronological. The awesome change that develops at Sinai is latter events are going to be the reason for former events. The future determines the past, not the past determines the future. Watch, I'll show you. I'll show you. Number three. It's a Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara asks the following question. The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, first pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar. The first pasuk is that the Rebbeinu tells Moshe and Aaron, in the second month of the second year in the desert, to take a census of the Jewish people. Second month, Iyar, mitzvah to count the Jewish people. Bamidbar, Naso, in the middle of Bahar Lodcha, they are commanded to bring a Korban Pesach in the first month of the second year. So the Gemara asks, V'nichtov bereshit d'chodesh rishon, v'hoda nichtov d'chodesh sheni. Why does Bamidbar begin in the second month and Bahar Lodcha is the first month? Why didn't they simply stop Bamidbar with Nisan, Korban Pesach, Iyar, the mitzvah to count the Jewish people? The Gemara gives such an unusual answer. I don't know how for years I learned it and didn't take note. And the moment that I took note of this Gemara, I don't know whether I shook. I started jumping for joy. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa Mishmeid Rav. Rav Menashe bar Tachlifa said in the name of Rav, Zot Omeret, this comes to tell us that the Torah is not written in chronological order. Askehet? Yeah, ever heard an answer like that? You're all acquainted with Ein Mugdom U'Mu'ucha BaTorah. Is that an answer here? Let me ask you. This tells us that Torah is not written in chronological order. It's not. Is that so? It starts with Adam, Sheis, Enosh, Kenan, Halal, El, Yored, 10 generations from Adam to Noah, 10 generations from Noah to Avram, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe. Torah is not written in chronological order. All of Torah, from beginning to end, is written in chronological order. There's one exception. You know what the one exception is? The beginning of the Midbar. How can the Gemara go ahead and say, Zot Omeret, this comes to tell me a rule. Torah is not written in chronological order. That's the English translation of it. That the Torah is not written chronological. Of course the Torah is written chronological order. What do you think? The Torah is just kind of a balagan jumble of facts. It's clearly laid out. It starts with the beginning of the world and it ends with Klal Yisrael on the plains of Moab, poised for the thrust into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu dies. And Yahushua picks up immediately from there, straight chronological order. Obviously, we have to learn a completely different pshat over here. So I'll tell you how I learn pshat in this Gemara. Zot Omeret is talking not about the text of Torah. You know what Zot Omeret, this is coming to tell us? That Jewish history does not follow in the order of Mukdam and Mu'uchar, the former and the latter. Jewish history is precisely the opposite. The Mu'uchar is that which dictates the Mukdam. And you know where the Torah tells us this? They are counted at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Why are they counted? Because they are preparing for the entry into Eretz Yisrael. In Bahar Lodcha, we're told of the celebration of Yetziat Mitzrayim. The celebration of Yetziat Mitzrayim in the text is the latter. And here the Mugdam is the entry into Eretz Yisrael, because that's how Jewish history worked. Jewish history works that there are events that cause other events, but the events that cause one another are not chronological. That's how the Torah wants to point out. No, we're getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. But you should know, Yetziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, was dictated by that which is Mugdam here in Parshat Bamidbar. Watch, you'll see how we're going to develop this further. Number four. Gemara in the Sefer Megillah. Achar HaDvarim HaEla. Third chapter in the Megillah begins with the words, here it is, it's on the right-hand side of the page. Achar HaDvarim HaEla. The Gemara inquires, Achar Mai, after what? Remember, beginning of the third chapter is, after these things, God forbid. Haman ben Hamdasa HaGogi was raised and exalted, and everybody's bending and bowing down to him. What does Achar HaDvarim HaEla mean? Omar Rava, listen to what Rava says. Achashel Bora HaKadosh Baruch Hu Refuah L'Mako, after God had created the healing for the blows that Klal Yisrael was going to receive. The Omar Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish said, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makeh Et Yisrael, the Holy One, blessed be, He does not strike Israel, Elun Kein Bori Lehem Refuah Tchel, unless He has the Refuah ready in advance. Do you hear the significance of this? By the end of the second chapter of the Megillah, Vashti is dead, Esther is the queen, Mordechai has discovered the plot to assassinate Ahasuerush, it has been, his life is saved, it's all written in the book of records. Do you know what's happened now? Everything that is necessary in order to save the Jewish people is in place. Chapter 3. Haman rises to power. Do you know what happened over here? What dictated everything that happened in chapters 1 and 2? What's going to happen in 3, 4, 5, 6? The latter dictates the former, not the former the latter. A whole different view of history. A completely different view of history. And you can see what difference it's going to make. The Gemara goes on to say, Avul Umos Ha'olam, but by the nations of the world, it's not so. By the nations of the world, first he strikes them, and then he creates the refuah. You know what order that is? That's chronological order. By the nations of the world, it's chronological. Megitzat Zizetz, and then the Gemara will take his time to figure out, do they deserve to be healed? Not deserve to be healed. But before he strikes Klal Yisrael, everything is in place. Because Jewish history is not chronological. It's the exact opposite of chronological. Number four. Just read what's underlined. Omar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Golu v'yadua l'fnei misha Omar v'hoya. It was, God knew that Haman was going to count out Shkalim in order to buy the lives of Klal Yisrael. Higdim, he gave us a mitzvah in Torah of Shkalim, so that our Shkalim are going to stand up there against Haman's Shkalim. Blows your mind away. The mitzvah of Shkalim that we have in Torah was dictated by event that was going to take place a thousand years later. One more step. There was a great, and I mean it in terms of how the world looked at him, there was a great historian called Arnold Toynbee. That was part of our generation. 12 volumes of the study of history. So until a certain time, he was considered one of the greatest historians who ever lived. I don't know, I did a little Googling today and I find out that there were some people who attacked him afterwards, so he's not the greatest, but okay. What was the godless of this Arnold Toynbee? Two things. Number one, he discovered a pattern in the civilizations of this world. 22 civilizations. He identified and wrote the history of 22 civilizations. There's nobody who knows history better than him. He may have made some of them up, I don't know. But all right, I take it. 22 civilizations. But there was something fascinating that he found about these civilizations. All of them went through an infancy that was fraught with great danger. They began to grow. They developed. They became strong. They needed Lebensraum. They moved out. They grew and reached the peak of greatness. And the moment that they reached the period of greatness, and maybe even a little bit before that, there were already the signs of decay, the reasons for deterioration that would ultimately bring them to dissolution and disappearance. And 22 great civilizations simply disappeared from the face of this earth. I saw good work from him. Civilizations are not destroyed, they commit suicide. There were witnesses from in, machlokes, corruption, all sorts of things. And 22 civilizations followed the pattern. It was a clear chronological pattern. Only one people didn't fit the pattern, the Jews. According to Toynbee, the Jews should have disappeared really about 2,000 years ago. So what's he going to do? So the truth is, if he would have really been an honest individual and not a anti-Semite, I controlled myself from saying a lot about angels. If he would have been an honest individual, he would have said, you know what? There are exceptions to the rule, and for that matter, the exception to the rule may very well prove the rule itself. 22 civilizations rose and disappeared. One didn't. But since he was an anti-Semite, said, can't be. So what do you do with living Jews? So he said, every civilization leaves over fossils, you know, shards, coins. Our prime minister spoke about a coin that they found at the near the Kotel with the name Netanyahu on it. All right? At the UN. All right? So he says the Jews are fossils of a previous civilization, but the civilization is gone. It's dead. It's finished. Then, of course, he had the greatest shock of his life. The greatest shock of his life was the day of the establishment of the State of Israel. There was nowhere on record is there anything like a fossil creating a state. He was in a terrible dilemma. So, of course, what he did with his dilemma was he began to express his anti-Semitism. And it expressed itself most in Har-Nof. There was no Har-Nof there, but Har-Nof is built on the ruins of Deir Yassin. So he came up with the ugly equation that what Nazis were to Jews, Jews became to Arabs. So he turned us in to latter-day Nazis. Okay? Right. There's so much. It's worthwhile studying. And I happened to have been in Canada at the time. I was a Roshiva in Toronto at the time that a 39-year-old fellow by the name of Yaakov Herzog, Olav Shalom, who was Israel's ambassador to Canada, challenged 72-year-old Toynbee to a debate at McGill University. Unbelievable. I don't often go on to, but they have we have a record of it at home. You know what I mean by a record? you remember the things, you know? Crazy. But I don't have a record player. So you know what they have? They have a film of it. I googled it. I was listening to Yaakov Herzog speaking. You have no idea. It brought back so many memories. So he challenged him to a debate. And 39-year-old Herzog, according to just about everybody, wiped the floor with 72-year-old Arnold Toynbee. Do you know what Toynbee didn't understand? If Jewish history would be linear and chronological, then exactly what happened to all of his 22 civilizations should have happened to the Jewish people. But it's not chronological. It doesn't go from Mugdam to Me'uchar. Me'uchar is what determines Mugdam. And God already described what the Me'uchar is going to be. There's a divine plan. It's not natural history. It's divine history. That makes all the difference in the world. For example, oh, how did I miss that? Number 4b. 4b is so beautiful. The Gemara says that Haman drew lots. What month is he going to destroy the Jewish people? And the lots came out on the month of Adar. So the Gemara, Somach Simcha Gedola, he was so happy because it was the month Shemed Bo Moshe. It was the month that Moshe died. The Lo Haya Yodea, the Gemara says, he didn't know. Shebeshiva Ba'ada Mate, he didn't know that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. Ubeshiva Ba'ada Nolad, and on the 7th of Adar he was born. And Rashi explains that, you know, Tzadikim Gedolim, their years are complete. I have a problem with this Gemara. My problem with this Gemara is, how did he know that Moshe died in the month of Adar? How did he know that? You know why? Because he had a guy by the name of Dennis Ross who was in charge of his Jewish desk. He had his court Jew, like every leader had. Huh? Yeah, that's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died? I would assume, just like he knew that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar, he should have known that Moshe Rabbeinu was born. I mean, information is available in the world. This wasn't hidden information. Even to know when Moshe Rabbeinu died, you have to figure it out from in the Pesukim. It doesn't say that he died. Then I have a bigger question. I have a problem with the last sentence of the Gemara. V'lo ha'yodea, Haman didn't know that b'shiva ba'adar, on the 7th of Adar, mate, he died, u'b'shiva ba'adar nolad, and Moshe was born on the 7th of Adar. Is that sentence a correct sentence? All right, I'll read it again. You're being tested right now. V'lo ha'yodea, he didn't know that b'shiva ba'adar, mate, u'b'shiva ba'adar nolad. Doesn't work that way. People are born before they die. The Gemara should have said, V'lo ha'yodea, Haman didn't know that b'shiva ba'adar Moshe was born, and on shiva ba'adar was made. The Gemara is perfectly on the mark. Haman knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was born on the 7th of Adar and died on the 7th of Adar, but he thought that Moshe Rabbeinu's history is chronological. It goes from birth to death, and then it's all over. And Haman thought, therefore, that death applies to the Jewish people too. He didn't understand that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar, and on that self-same day he was born for all of eternity. There is no such thing as death. That's what he didn't know. He didn't know what Toynbee didn't know after him. The Jewish history is different. It's not chronological. There's a Rabbeinu Shalalem. There's a plan for the world. Do you know what God is telling the Jewish people in the first mitzvah of Achodesh Hazeh Lochem? I wanted God to sing for them, Am Yisrael Chai, Od Avinu Chai, Shema Yisrael. There is no greater message that God could have given the Jewish people than Achodesh Hazeh Lochem. Because the mitzvah of Achodesh Hazeh Lochem tells them, first of all, that Rosh Chodesh Nisan being the first of months, your history is different, qualitatively different. Your history is not chronological. Your history is divine. You know what he's telling them? You're an eternal people. At the moment that they're still in Mitzrayim, he tells them, I'm taking you out, but you're going to be eternal. You're going to go through all sorts of tzachas. There are moments in history when the world will be saying that the curtain is finally coming down on Jewish history, and they're all wrong. 3 years after the curtain was supposed to come down, 1945, 3 years later, the fossil, the ashes, established a state. Unbelievable. I still, you know, I can't figure it out. You understand? Uncle Sam, you understand, has all sorts of economic tzaddis, the charachmanis on the United States of America, the charachmanis, you understand? And this economy over here is the shekel. Anybody who kept their money in dollars over the last 10 years made a big mistake. Would have been better off in shekels. But I'm not telling you what to do now. Nobody knows what's going to happen from one day to the next. A mighty army. It's unbelievable. A mighty army. One of the most mighty in the world. It's all. Because Jewish history is divine history. Divine history is not chronological. It's not linear. Only one thing is left. There's only one thing left. What in heaven's name does this have to do with tshuva? The title of this lecture was Tshuva and Jewish History. You know what it has to do with tshuva? I'll tell you what it has to do with tshuva. How does tshuva work? Man sinned. You can't undo it. Finished. He sinned. You stole. You rebelled against God. You killed. What do you mean tshuva? How does tshuva work? I'm sorry. What do you mean you're sorry? What does it mean you're sorry? So you know what I suggest, and I'm going to prove it. Just like the history of the Jewish people is not chronological, so the story of each individual is not chronological. If things go from A to B to C, from 1 to 2 to 3, you did an Avera, you're finished. It's all over. There's no such thing as tshuva. But if the future is that which impacts on the past, then we have to take a look at this Baal Tshuva. What does he look like now? And what he looks like now is going to impact on the past. Watch. I'm going to prove this too. Medrash. Great Medrash. Number 5. HaNefesh HaChotat Hi Tamut. This is a pasuk in Yecheskel. Sha'alu L'Chochma. They asked wisdom. Chote Mahu Ancho. What is the punishment for one who sins? Wisdom answered, Chatoyim Teradei Fro. That's a pasuk in Mishlei. Wisdom. Evil will pursue the wicked. The evil that you did is going to drive you for the rest of your life. Shalom and Nevuah, they asked prophecy. Chote Mahu Ancho. What is the punishment for a sinner? Nevuah said, HaNefesh HaKotah Hi Tamut. The soul that sins shall die. That's it. You sinned, finished. It's all over. Shalu la Torah. Torah was asked, Chote Mahu Ancho, what is the punishment for a sinner? Torah said, Yovi Osham Yitkapel, let him bring a korban and he'll be forgiven. Shalu la Kodesh Baruch Hu. They asked the Holy One, blessed be He, Chote Mahu Ancho, what is the punishment for a sinner? He said, Yase Tshuva V'yitkapelo, let him do tshuva and he'll be forgiven. Why is it only God who can say that? Why can't Torah say that? Why can't Nevuah say that? Why can't Chachma say that? You know why? Because God inhabits a completely different sphere in time. There's no past, present, and future. Everything is all one by the Rebbeinu. He doesn't live with memory of the past, anticipation for the future. All of time is one single instant. There's no former and latter. The Chote who does tshuva, Ad HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shuva Yisrael, Ad Hashem Elokecha, you know what happens to him? He becomes caught up in the time frame of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam himself. That's God's great chesed. And in his time frame, It's not as though you did the Avera at one point and then you did Tshuva. It all takes place in one moment of time. And when you move into that time sphere, there is no Mukdam and Meucher at all. No former and latter. You're in the same time frame, in the same moment at which the sin was committed, and in that time frame, you can do Tshuva. You can undo it. Because when you merge with the Rebbe Shem himself, Tshuva Yisrael, Ad Hashem Elokecha, you move beyond the miraculous time sphere of Klal Yisrael. Our time sphere is dramatically different than that of the rest of the world, and the Rebbe Shem's is even more dramatically different. One more proof of that, the end. The Gemara in Nedarim number 6 says there were 7 things that were created before the world came into being. Torah and Tshuva, Gan Eden, Gehenim, Kisei HaKavod uBeit HaMikdash, and Shmo Shel Moshiach. You know what it means when we say that Tshuva came into existence before the creation of the world? Tshuva is not limited or bound by time. That's what we're saying. I'll tell you even more. You know what it means that Tshuva was created before the world was created? The Rebbe Shem created the Refuah before the Makkah. Before man had a chance to sin, the possibility of Tshuva already existed. Because the human being, the Jew who does Tshuva, fuses, becomes one with the Rebbe Shem himself. Ad Hashem Lokecha. And in that sphere of Rebbe Shem, time plays no role whatsoever. There's no former and latter. Tshuva can undo whatever happened. So Reish Lakish himself, who even says, Reish Lakish, of course, was the great Baal Tshuva of the Talmud, the great Baal Tshuva, the gladiator turned Gadol B'Yisrael. Poshu, we can't move any place through Shas without Reish Lakish. He says, the Baal Tshuva who was the sinner who rebelled against God, he sinned because he wanted to sin. He does Tshuva. Zidonos, the terrible sins that he did, Nasu Kizachuyot, they become mitzvahs. Because he's in the same time frame. He's able to undo it completely. Because if we permit the meuchar, the latter, to dictate the former, the latter, we see before ourselves a Jew who has done tshuva to the very depths of his heart. That's the result that impacts on what happened earlier in time. The sin disappears. Tshuva, the secret of tshuva, is the secret of Jewish history. They don't know it. You know what? They all think like Toynbee. They all think like Haman before him. There is no question about it that all of those who are arrayed against us in this world, they want to destroy us utterly, and they think it can be done. They don't understand. Lo Yodim, they don't know that we are different and our history is different. We are God's people. All that we need to do is keep him on our side. And the fact is that he has promised that he will be on our side all the time. The koach of tshuva, the power of tshuva, is inextricably intertwined with the amazing quality of Jewish history. Ein mugdam u'meuchar in Jewish history. Ein mugdam u'meuchar in tshuva. It's not chronological. It's not linear. You don't have to know all of the reasons for the French revolution. It's all the great chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are able to fuse and become one with him. And that's why tshuva works. See you, everybody. I could present you.